This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Hello, it is the Fun Kids Science Weekly, our 7 daily packet of all the most amazing, incredible and dangerous things in the world. If you're always wondering why things in the universe are the way they are, this is the show for you. My name is Dan. Today, we're finding out if cars could ever eat chips like you and me. Because it's the summer and you'll be spending all of your time in there pretty soon. We'll learn about the most deadly creature in the ocean. And we will talk to a scientist who is answering some of the universe's biggest questions. First, we're heading to the coolest school in the galaxy, where Professor Pulsar is telling us all about how space travel has invented other things.
Deep Space High, the Universe Handbook, with the Science and Technology Facilities Council.
Right, class, settle down. I'm about to be extra nice, and you won't want to miss that.
Yeah, it's like Pluto's orbit. Only happens once every 248 years.
I heard that. Your universe handbooks are looking superb. From gravity to wormholes, pulsars to parallax, you've done a cracking job of getting to grips with the, frankly, mind-boggling reaches of space exploration. To reward all your hard work, you can all go home early. How about that? All right, that's enough. We're not quite done yet. To finish off this term, I asked you to come up with some great reasons to get exploring space. Who'd like to go first?
Well, a really great reason to explore space is because it helps develop cool inventions that you can use on Earth. Or any planet you like. Sorry, Blurb, I forget Earth's not the only planet.
Inventions, super clever engineering things like rocket exhaust pipes. I'm sure they're very impressive and all that, but I wouldn't call them cool.
Nah, nothing like that. I've brought a few inventions I use every day that are a result of space exploration. Here, catch. This is my cycle helmet. I wear it to protect my head when riding my bike. It's really light, isn't it? Shock-absorbing foam in it was developed in the 1960s as part of the Apollo space program.
Nice! Love the colours too. It looks like a nebula.
Thanks. I painted it myself after we went nebula diving last term. Here's something else I like playing with when I'm at home.
A games console? I don't think astronauts on the International Space Centre would get much work done if they were playing Rocket Wars all day.
Not the game, the microprocessor inside it. If it wasn't for the space exploration, computers might still be as big as a room. And the joystick was originally developed for Apollo's lunar rover in the early 1970s.
I think the lunar rover would have been more fun to play with than a computer game.
Well, yes, definitely. But these are a little bit easier to buy.
Very good presentation, Alex. 10 out of 10. Hey, I've been extra nice twice in one lesson. I'm on a roll. Don't spoil it for me now, Stats. What have you got for us?
A great reason to explore space is that it's a challenge.
Stats, aren't challenges usually hard work and a bit, well, boring?
Is a tricky level on that computer game of yours boring? Or is riding your bike down a really bumpy hill? Does it send you to sleep because it's just such a boring thing to do?
Nah, I love doing that.
There you go. Sometimes things that are a challenge are brilliant fun.
That's actually true. I once got stuck in a game for 5 weeks, and when I completed it, I was so happy I fell off my bike. Probably shouldn't have been multitasking there.
You see, me, I love a challenge. It's easy to measure the stuff in front of you. Anyone can do that. But who wants to be just anyone? Being able to work out how heavy a star is, or to work out the temperature on a distant planet from millions of miles away, now that's the really cool stuff.
Fantastic, Stats. Who's next up? Electra? Come on then, let's be having you. Good to see you tightly screwed together today. Off you go before something works loose.
A great reason to explore space is because it's exciting. You never know what you might find out there. Maybe a binary star system, a black hole, or even a nebula that looks like blep.
I agree with you, Electra. One of the most exciting things of all that you might find out there is other life forms.
That's right. After all, not everyone can come to Deep Space High, but everyone can get involved in space exploration. You just need a dark night and no clouds. And on that happy note, we shall end the lesson for today. But remember, it's just the start of your space exploration adventures. Class dismissed.
Deep Space High. The Universe Handbook with the Science and Technology Facilities Council.
All the Deep Space High episodes and everything else sciencey we do is absolutely free for you to download on the Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com. So we will chat to someone who's actually working on the Large Hadron Collider in just a sec. First, I want to say a huge hello to Korinsky and Matched over on iTunes who have dropped us a review. Thank you so much. Hope you're having a brilliant summer, guys. If you want a shout out on this show, by the way, the easiest thing that you can do if you're listening to the Fun Kids Science Weekly as a podcast is to leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think. It's dead simple. It takes about 20 seconds on your phone or tablet, just a few presses of your thumb to a screen. Then I can know that you're listening to us, that you're loving it, and I can know your name as well, which is quite important for a shout out. Now, today's guest is trying to answer some of the hardest questions that the universe has ever asked. It's Victoria Martin. She's a physicist at CERN, and she's on the phone now. Hey, Victoria.
Hello.
Right, so you're a physicist at CERN, but you're part of the ATLAS collaboration as well, aren't you? So I know what CERN is. Can you tell me more about ATLAS?
So ATLAS is one of the big experiments at the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC at CERN. And basically, we're like an enormous digital camera that takes photos of what happens at the LHC, which is colliding protons together. So protons are some of the particles that are inside the atom. So the LHC is basically a super-duper atom smasher. And the ATLAS experiment just takes pictures of what happens when we smash the atoms together. The physical size of it is huge, and we have about 3,000 physicists working together to run the experiment.
Is a proton just like a regular atom? Is it a tiny piece of the atom? What are you actually smashing together?
So a proton is a tiny piece of the atom, but this most simple kind of atom you can get is a hydrogen atom, and is actually made of just one proton and one electron. And the proton's in the middle, and the electron kind of circulates around the proton in the hydrogen atom. So it's kind of the middle of a hydrogen atom.
Tell me more then about the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider. I remember a few years ago, it was all over the news. You couldn't move for it. Is it still going on? Has it found what it meant to find?
Yeah, it's still going on. I mean, it's still going on as we speak right now. So we started the Large Hadron Collider up about 8 years ago, and it's been running stronger and stronger more or less every year since then. We have switched it off for a bit of TLC and then put it back on again a few years ago. But it's a long-term project. It was always intended to be a long-term 25, 30 years project. So we have found one of the things we were looking for. So 5 years ago now, we made a big announcement that we discovered the Higgs boson, which is something that particle physicists had been thinking must exist for a long time. But that's not the only thing the LHC can do. And now we're off looking for new things that might happen in the LHC, such as dark matter.
Tell me about these new things. If it's new, how can you know what it's going to be, even though you've not found it yet?
That's a really good question. So we have a guess. We have a really good educated guess, and people that also look at different theories help us come up with ideas for what it will look like if we found something like dark matter inside the collisions at the Large Hadron Collider. But it could be something that we haven't thought about already. So we monitor to see if there are unusual things going on, as well as what we think should be going on. So, nature, that's what we're trying to find out about after all. Nature might take us completely by surprise.
What kinds of things would be a surprise for CERN while you're looking at this dark matter? You've got a slight idea of what you think might be out there, but what would be way off the scale of anything that you can imagine?
Ooh, oh, that's really hard to say because we only thought about what we've thought about so far. But there are some kind of weird and wonderful ideas. One of the weird and wonderful ideas is that we might be able to make black holes inside the Large Hadron Collider. They would be mini black holes, they would be tiny black holes. And that's really one of Einstein's rules put into practice, that you can't put any more energy out of the collision than you put in. So they would be teeny tiny black holes, and in fact they would evaporate, disappear really quickly, but we might be able to make them, and certainly we're looking for that. Some of us, some fraction of the 3,000 of us, are looking to see if we can make mini black holes in the Large Hadron Collider.
When you see black holes on the telly in sci-fi and movies like that, usually what happens when you go inside is you come out somewhere else. What were to happen, I know that you say these black holes evaporate almost as soon as they've formed, but if you could almost slow time down, find one of these tiny black holes, stick your finger in it, what would happen the other side?
I don't think we know. We don't know because we've not made one yet. I mean, a big black hole would kind of stretch you out and make you very long and skinny, and you'd disappear inside it. That's why it's called a black hole, because we can't see anything come out of it. So maybe that would happen, but the prediction is they evaporate so quickly that you wouldn't have time to stick anything inside it.
And how is dark matter different from regular matter that's all around us and stuff we can see?
So dark matter is something actually that our astronomy colleagues have observed when they're looking out into different galaxies, out into the universe. And regular matter is something like the sun or the things we have on Earth. And its main feature is that it's shiny, or it reflects light, so that we can see stuff in the Earth because it reflects light and we know it's there. We can see the sun because it burns and it shines and we can see it. But what astronomers have seen is matter that has gravitational effects. So we can see that it's got some gravity acting on it, but it isn't shining. So the amount of shining stuff, the stars and the galaxies they can see, doesn't account for the amount of gravitational interactions they can see by different galaxies pulling on each other. So we know it's dark, it doesn't shine. I mean, that's the main feature. But apart from that, we don't really know what it is. We just know it's there. And at the Large Hadron Collider, if we manage to make it inside our atom smasher, we'll be actually be able to have a look at it in more detail and actually find out a bit more about how heavy it is, what it does. Does it interact? We know it's going to be dark, but there are other interactions it might have, just like it has gravity, that we'd be able to detect.
Now, I know that the Higgs boson particle, this was what you found a few years ago now, quite early on, and that was, it was trying to solve one of the questions of how our universe formed, how matter can be made from nothing. Did it completely solve that question, or has it given you even more to answer?
It's actually given us more to answer. So it's basically ticked off one thing. We're all, in some sense, relieved that the Higgs boson exists, because a lot of the theories and the ideas we have didn't really work without the Higgs boson there. But, I mean, once you have a Higgs boson, it actually brings up more questions. And the questions for us scientists are, you know, how do you make a Higgs boson? Yes, you can make it in the Large Hadron Collider, but there's lots of different ways when you smash the atoms together it can be made. So we're looking at that. And then, just like that mini black hole I was talking about, the Higgs boson disintegrates, again, almost immediately, slightly slower than the black hole, but really quickly. And it doesn't disintegrate into nothing, it disintegrates into other particles, most of them we already know about, and we're trying to measure how often it does that. And so these detailed measurements are really what we want to know to check, actually, if Peter Higgs's theory, he's the scientist that came up with the idea of the Higgs boson, if it's really correct, right down at the detailed level.
Now, Victoria, say, think back to like 200 years ago, middle of Victorian time. If you had told people then that there was a particle that would help explain the start of the Big Bang and how things grow out of nothing, they wouldn't have believed you, but now it's true. Is there anything that you're working on at CERN right now that would seem nonsense to us, but maybe in 200 years' time, it would seem like normality?
But that's also a really difficult question. From physics, it's really hard to say because a lot of it's speculative and we just don't know if it makes any sense. But the one thing we are working on as well at CERN is a lot of technology. Now, we don't work on technology for technology's sake. We work on it so we can build the Large Hadron Collider, the world's largest atom smasher, And so we can understand what happens in the collisions. So a lot of the technology we're developing might in 10 or 20 or 50 years time be something that people find in their house every day, but it was first built for us to do particle physics experiments at CERN.
Talk to me about parallel universes, Victoria. I love the idea that they might exist. Is it possible?
We don't know. It's certainly an idea that some people have been thinking about. And I was just reading today, actually, one way you might be able to tell if they exist is actually by looking back at the Big Bang and trying to work out in more detail what happened at the Big Bang. Because if there is a parallel universe there and somehow we're able to communicate with it, that might have happened around the time of the Big Bang. And maybe we can see it. So actually, that's a good case where you get cosmologists who look back in time towards the Big Bang and astronomers who use observations of what they see in space and particle physicists working together to try and find out some of the fundamental science of the universe. And that's maybe how we could see if there was a parallel universe out there or not.
You've blown my mind, Victoria. I'm so hoping that maybe in a parallel universe, another Dan on the Fun Kids Science Weekly is chatting to another Victoria Martin, physicist at CERN.
I'm sure they are chatting.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Victoria, for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Right, it's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, where we learn about some of the most deadly and monstrous things in the universe. And today we're heading to Australia. Because little tip, if you want danger and deadly stuff, head to Australia. It's full of them. Snakes, spiders. Right now we're heading under the water into the deep sea to meet the box jellyfish. They float in the oceans around Australia and Asia, and they do little else but try to cause you harm. Now, the problem is they're mostly see-through, which is a pain if you're trying to avoid them, and they look a bit like a bell. They've got long strands of tentacles hanging down from them, 15 tentacles. They reach 3 meters long, and they're covered with around 500,000 venom-filled darts. The poison which they spurt from their tentacles acts fast as well. It sears through your body, and people who have been stung and who survived say it's like being branded with an iron. They've got 24 eyes, 4 brains, and they don't just drift around the ocean. They hunt out prey and they attack. That's why the box jellyfish has got to be the most dangerous and evil creature in the sea. Right, we're staying in the ocean now on the Fun Kids Science Weekly with Marina Ventura.
Marina Ventura's Ocean Adventure, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world.
Marina Ventura here, continuing my ocean adventure, and today I'm at the bottom of the world on the Antarctic Peninsula, a chilly place, but one that tells us a lot about oceans and our climate. As you know, if you've ever made a snowman, when the weather gets warmer, ice and snow melt back into water, and the extra water from melted ice can make sea levels rise. So if we're worried about sea levels, we need to keep an eye on icy places like this. Helps to wear some warm clothing whilst you're doing it. Just like your snowman, things rarely stay the same in nature. Tiny creatures called bryozoans live around the Antarctic coastlines and have been found in places a long way away from each other. This tells us that once the ice that separates them now wasn't there. And more chilling than that, over a number of years, an ice shelf half the size of Scotland has been collapsing. It used to be joined to the mainland by a thin bridge of ice, but in 2009, the worst happened. The bridge broke! This was worrying to scientists, because once ice shelves collapse, there's nothing to stop glaciers sliding into the ocean and melting, and that makes sea levels rise. Sometimes, seawater frozen to the bottom of the glaciers can help hold things together. Glacier ice is cold and brittle, like chocolate that's been in the fridge. But sea ice is warmer, like chocolate when it's been warmed up. It's wobblier, more flexible, and can stick things together a bit. Mmm, not quite as tasty though. Now, we know that the heat that warms the ice comes from around the equator, but how does this heat arrive down here? That's a real puzzle, and one for MapApp, the electronic essential for every explorer. It's in my rucksack. Hang on. That's not it. I thought I'd packed it near the top. Oh, I wondered where my picnic hamper had gone. Oh, here it is.
it's Chilly here. My microchips need mittens.
Hope you can help us, Map App. How does the heat from the equator end up here?
Easy. It's all about ocean currents. Ocean currents move lots of things around. And that could be a message in a bottle, a clump of seaweed, or water warmed up by the sun. Scientists use powerful computers to analyze data from the oceans to tell us about the routes the currents take. It's a tough job. That's why one such computer, called OCAM, has 500 processors to figure it all out.
Amazing. Well, I'm off for a hot bath, so I'll see you next time when we look at how sea life affects the oceans. Doodle pip, adventurers.
Marina Ventura's Ocean Adventure, a Fun Kids production in association with the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world.
We've got loads more Marina Ventura adventures that you can download for free on iTunes, on the Fun Kids app, and at funkidslive.com. Let's find out what sciencey stuff has been happening in the news this week. The big story is that the government want all new cars to be electric by the year 2040. So in 23 years, you won't be able to buy any cars powered by petrol or diesel, just electric. And this will make the air cleaner, the sky safer, and hopefully the earth will become healthy again. Now, a few weeks ago on the show, we were speaking about the Hawaiian volcano Mauna Loa. Do you remember this? It's the largest active volcano in the world. And scientists are spending 8 months living on the actual volcano to simulate and understand what it might be like to live on Mars, because they think the conditions are similar to the Red Planet. And finally, scientists have found that galaxies may be getting bigger by stealing gas from their neighbours. This comes after a study which suggests half the matter of the Milky Way galaxy, that's the one we're in, was taken from other nearby galaxies. And if galaxies need gas to grow bigger, turns out they'll just steal it. That's fine. Right, it's Techno Mum time now on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Today she's finding out if cars could run on chip fat, because why not?
Techno Mum's Tech Line, with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology.
Got a call. Hello, you're through to Techno Mum's Tech Line. What's your techno question?
Hi Techno Mum, is it true that you can run a car on chip fat?
It certainly sounds fishy, doesn't it? But incredibly, yes. It is possible to run a car using fat that's been used for cooking chips, although it's a little bit more complicated than it sounds. It's all to do with vegetable oil. You see, when chips are cooked in places like your local fish and chip shop, there's lots of leftover cooking oil, or as it's also known, waste vegetable oil. Now, a little while ago, some clever people worked out that cars designed to use diesel fuel could be powered by this vegetable oil, although with a few important tweaks. So how's it done? To start with, you don't just pour chip oil into the fuel tank. You firstly have to heat the oil up to steam off any water that might be in it. Some chemicals are then added, and the oil is left to separate out into layers. It then needs to go through a process of filtering before it can be used, to remove impurities and any old chips that might still be in there. This is definitely a job for the grown-ups, and even they need to be very careful. Once all of that's done, the fuel can then be used in your car. This kind of fuel is known as biofuel because it comes from living matter. That's the crops that we use to make the vegetable oil in the first place. Many people think that biofuels like these are good for the environment because it's basically recycling oil that would otherwise just be thrown away. Remember though, hot oil can give you nasty burns, so stay safe and leave this sort of thing to your parents.
Techno Mum's Tech Line, with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology. Find out more at funkidslive.com.
There is loads more Techno Mum that you can catch up on online at funkidslive.com, on iTunes, and over at on the free Fun Kids app. Now, something very exciting is happening next week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, which you can still be part of. There's a little bit of time, don't worry. We're getting an actual scientist, a proper smart professor, in the Fun Kids studio to answer your science question. And it doesn't matter how ridiculous what you're thinking is. The question can be about why some foods are smellier than others, why your earwax is so green, I don't know, maybe why Saturn has rings, you've always wondered that. Any question about science is fine. Just send it over to my page at funkidslive.com. You might hear the answer next week. Right, that is it for this episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Remember, you can listen to all of our cool science series on the free Fun Kids app and download them for free on iTunes. And you can listen to Fun Kids on DAB Digital Radio all over the UK, on the app and over online at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB Digital Radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.